You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And I want to get right to our first guest, Carm, who's on the line. Carm, it was what a weird thing to start my day with you and end your day with me.
Patty, it's a thrill. I mean, honestly, when you walked in the studio,
oh, we're losing you. Are you, Tom, did you give him a tin can to use? Just kidding.
I might have.
Where are you, Carm?
I'm in my bed, Patty.
That was exactly the information that I wanted, actually. Is Arnold nearby?
Arnold's right here. I've got a nice hydration bottle of water for me, and I'm going to be getting up in 4 hours and 45 minutes to go see Steve Cochran. So I'm expecting that you will leave bagels and muffins and orange juice and coffee.
You know, I didn't even think of that when I came in this morning. I should have run out and gotten something for everybody on the show. Instead, I just crawled out of my office, barely awake.
No, I think you're not required to bring anything when you're sleeping in your office to be on the Steve Cochran show. I think that's fine.
Well, you've been great. It's wonderful to hear you on Steve's show in the mornings, and I'm guessing it's because Dave Ennett, it's because you're very talented, you are filling in for Dave Ennett.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
No, it's because Dave Ennett's off, and there's no one else in the entire Chicago land that's willing to do it.
It's not the reason. It's great to hear you in the mornings, and it's great that Dave Ennett is out of town this week because he's where?
He is in Salt Lake City, Utah, which, just like Sletch, the story is Utah. The Northwestern Wildcats, as everybody I know, is on the edge of their seats right now, Patty.
Hold on, me too. People Hold on, I am too. Okay, go ahead.
There you go. People are literally driving down the Edens, down the Kennedy, on the Ike, on the whatever roads that Esmeralda talks about all the time. They're all just, they're wearing purple. They're pulling over to the side of the road and they're singing the fight song, You Rah Rah.
That's the fight song? There must be more words.
Well, that's a part of the fight song.
You Rah Rah.
I mean, we could do the Go You Northwestern, fight right through that line with your flyers, with your colors flying, we will, but I don't really know the words. So I'm just going to stick with you, rah, rah. You know, I met Willie the Wildcat today, Patty. That was a big, big moment in my day. I jumped on Willie. You know, I was able to climb on his back, and Willie lifted me up. I mean, there's so many people in my life who have lifted me up, like you, per se. But the way Willie lifted me today, it was transformational. I can't lie to you.
It's all good. there's no reason to lie to me or tell me that you're not going to lie to me. I think that when we do need the ooh-rah-rah Northwestern fight song will be after they win their first game in the NCAA tournament.
I really, really, really hope so. Coin flip, you know, 1-point game in Vegas, Northwestern seeded 32 in the tournament, Vanderbilt seeded 33. I mean, assuming both teams play to their capabilities, it's going to be super tight.
I'm excited. Now, where are you going to be watching the game? And first of all, where can people watch the game? I mean, what channel? And, you know, where are you going to be watching the game? And what time?
I believe, you know, that's interesting. I believe the game is on ESPN.
Okay, ESPN.
But don't quote me on that.
I will not. Is repeating you the same as quoting you? I'm not sure.
No, yes, maybe. I don't know. I think it's just important to mention that Kiner's been wrong before. It very rarely happens. But I did get a text there on ESPN.
Okay.
I haven't actually looked, but I will be listening. I will be in the studio listening intently to Dave Ennett and Joey Meyer on the call for Real 5 pregame for me to be tipped off.
So everyone can listen to it on WGN and then and watch it in the background. I'm not sure. Do you watch in the background or do you listen in the background? Whatever way you do it, make sure you do it with WGN on.
Right. Well, in general, I mean, the radio is going to be ahead of the TV. So I feel like a lot of people, though, are going to be getting off work tomorrow and they'll be putting on the Real Con show and then realizing, oh, Rose not on, it's Northwestern basketball. And maybe, perhaps, historically, people might not listen to that broadcast, but I think tomorrow they'll be all in.
I think so, too. It's all good.
I mean, not, you know, obviously the diehard Northwestern fans, I always listen to the broadcast, and there's a bazillion of us. But just, I think Northwestern is starting to creep into the more casual right now. I think people are kind of paying attention, at least a little bit, to the story.
Absolutely.
Which is an awesome one.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. Their first time ever. Everyone's excited, and it's a thrill that they're in the tournament. I'm going to be watching the game. I mean, I haven't decided where yet. Maybe at home, listening to the game. Do you know what, did you say what time it was?
3:30,
Patty. 3:30. All right. I'm in. Maybe I'll have it on in the background at CrossFit. That's what I'll do.
Okay.
Yes. Not that you needed to know that information.
And I'll be in Studio B, and you can come pace with me if you'd like.
All right. I might be able to do that.
I'm just throwing out options for you. Just, you know, I think on the bike at the gym, Studio B, wherever you want to be.
No, maybe I'll come down and hang out with you for a bit. That sounds good.
No, it's there for you. I'm nuts during these games. I've been rooting for Northwestern since I came out of the womb. It's a sickness. And
I have a visual of that now.
Yes. I popped right out. I was wearing purple. My father.
Are you sure you were wearing purple or you were purple? Those are two different things.
Oh, right. I was purple. Good point.
Carm, I want to make sure you get some rest because you get to be up in 4 hours and 45 minutes to be right back here in the Allstate Showcase studio with Steve Cochran on the Cochran Show in the morning.
Oh, cupcakes, orange juice, coffee.
Bagels, some schmear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Patty.
Oorah! It was a year ago. Oorah. Can you believe that? It's been a year.
I know.
Let's do it again sometime.
Okay.
We have to go back to San Diego to the Marine Corps Recruit Depot. It was a very good time with you. But you know what? I'm going to come watch the game with you.
Okay, I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, Carm. Get some sleep and hug Arnold for me.
Okay.
Arnold's his pet duck, just so everyone knows.
Okay, thank you for mentioning that.
not that it matters, right, but I just want people to have the full visual. It's your stuffed pet duck.
Yes.
That's all weird.
Right here. What's up, buddy?
Okay, go cuddle with Arnold, will you? You know what? I think does Cochran know about Arnold? Because I don't think he has the full picture about your dating life.
Should I bring Arnold in tomorrow?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Does Cochran know? Because I know you're getting a lot of advice about how to get find a woman. That sounds so weird. It makes me uncomfortable that they're talking about you like that and giving you advice on how to get and keep a woman. I'm like, you're a wonderful human being, a great guy. You're kind. You're generous. You're handsome. I don't know if you need advice. It's just it's timing and meeting the right person.
No, I need advice.
Okay. All right, then.
No, I appreciate you saying that. And if we're really being honest about it, I obviously am able to date without Steve's guidance. But I do appreciate him caring the way he does.
Yes.
So,
well, tell him about Arnold so he has the whole picture.
Okay. Thank you.
And in the words of my great friend Mark Carman, I appreciate you.
I appreciate you, Patty.
Have a great night, Carm. That's Mark Carman.
Bye
bye. You can find him on Twitter at The Carm and on Facebook, Mark Carman. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. A lot of people celebrated St. Patrick's Day last week. The Chicago River was dyed green. The St. Patrick's Day Parade, both the north side, south side, there were parades everywhere. There were festivities all over the city. In fact, St. Patrick's Day is this Friday, and joining me in studio is Tim Taylor. He's on the board of directors at the Irish American Heritage Center. So many words. I'm a little nervous because you're a fellow talk show host.
Oh, well, thank you for mentioning that.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You host the Windy City Irish Radio Show on WSBC 1240 AM. I have no problem saying that.
Yeah, it doesn't have quite the terms of wattage, the blowtorch that WGN has, but it pumps out a little bit of wattage. And, we have a website, Windy City Irish Radio, and you can pick up our podcast at broadcast.com. We just finished the show. We had a big St. Patrick's Day show, 90-minute show, and I host the show with Mike Shevlin.
Oh, wonderful. And I was telling you off the air that I really enjoyed Saturday's event at the Irish American Heritage Center. The dancing, the music, the food, it was so well done, as it is in many years. This year seemed particularly smooth, if that's a way to put it.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. We've put a lot of work into it, as we do every year, but this year we did a few different things, and we kept the Aaron Room open later and after the kids, and so that alleviated a lot of the crowds in the Fifth Province. But the building was bursting with musical entertainment, and as you mentioned, the dancers, so many families there, and so many of the members, and so many of our great volunteers, and so they really worked hard to make it a great day, and I'm glad you noticed.
And when you mentioned the Aaron Room and the all the different destinations inside the building, I want to give people a picture of it. It used to be a school, a community college, I think. Was it a high school at some point?
It was, and then it was Mayfair Community College, mm-hmm. and the building was set to be demolished by the city. And the Irish American Heritage Center was established, but they didn't actually have their own home. Mm-hmm. And so they actually came across this building, and they purchased the building and the land for $1 million. And they took a loan through Lloyd's of London at a very high interest rate of 15%.
Whoa.
But they were very, very dedicated volunteers. They paid off the loan in a year. And then ever since that time, and that was through a lot of grassroots fundraising. And then ever since that time, they have been remodeling the center. We have a beautiful Fifth Province bar, mm-hmm. the library, which is a real showpiece of the center. Of course, the ballroom, the Aaron Room, where we host a lot of weddings and major events.
It's funny. I think if I'd know, I wasn't as familiar. And I live in the neighborhood. We started going to the Irish American Heritage Center in 2004. When did it open?
Oh, it opened about, it's been around for about almost 40 years,
okay.
and the building has been there for about 35 years.
So I don't know why, it wasn't something. My father was second generation Irish, but I think that he was the kind of guy that felt like, why do I got to be around anybody? You know, I kind of carry it in my family and that kind of thing. I'm glad to have found the Irish American Heritage Center for my sons. For my husband is also of Irish descent, but we have such great memories of bringing our sons there since they were babies. I would have loved to have used that facility for my wedding is what I'm, my long way of telling you that.
Well, you know, you can renew your vows in the Aaron Room, and that would be I think a perfect way to utilize the facility.
I have to agree with you on that. And it was the first time that I've been there that I actually had the opportunity to take some time and go in the room where they have your collection of china, and there was a gentleman giving everybody kind of the history of the items that are there. Tell us a little bit about that room.
Well, it's the museum. We have an art gallery, and then we have also the museum, and the museum holds our Balique collection, which mm-hmm. is a very rare collection that was donated many, many years ago. And if you are a fan or a collector of Balique, it's something that you really need to see. And then there's also lots of different other artifacts that are in the museum. You can learn a little bit about the Irish American Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chair that many of the dignitaries, Irish Americans and dignitaries visiting from Ireland, sit in or photographed in the chair. But there's just a lot of real gems in the museum and also in the art gallery as well.
And photographs of the Irish that have immigrated here. I think a lot of history tied to Chicago. And what about your family? Have you traced, how much have you traced back?
I did quite a bit of tracing. I have Irish roots on both my parents' side. My dad's side, we traced the roots back to Limerick mm-hmm. and Monaghan and County Lough. And also similar for my mother's side as well. And so my ancestors came over to the U.S. and specifically Chicago in about that period of the 1890s. A lot of the census records were lost in the 1890s,
right.
And so it's kind of a gray period.
We are talking to Tim Taylor, who is on the Executive Board of Directors of the Irish American Heritage Center. We'll talk a little bit more about how there are people at the Irish American Heritage Center who will help you with your genealogy. I know Terry O'Connell, who I stopped and talked to over the weekend, can help you out. Let's find out more about that and the events coming up this weekend for St. Patrick's Day. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Can't get enough of the Irish music. It is St. Patrick's Day this Friday, March 17th, of course. And we have in studio with us Tim Taylor. He is on the board of directors, the executive board of directors of the Irish American Heritage Center, which is up on the northwest side. It's over, what's the street there?
4626 North Knox Avenue. Knox and Wilson, just off of the Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. That exit for Wilson. So let's say you're going on the Kennedy and you're like, I don't want to go toward the airport. That traffic looks terrible. And the first exit you can take is Wilson. Before you go on to the Edens, and right there at the top of the hill, there's a church, and then behind that is the Irish American Heritage Center.
That is correct.
And this Friday, what's going on St. Patrick's Day?
Oh, man, there's so much going on. We open up the doors at 12 noon, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's no better way to start off the day with a pipe band. I mean, have you heard enough bagpipers yet?
Never.
No.
Never
right.
enough.
And we're just hitting our stride here.
That's
and
right.
So we start off with the City of Chicago Pipe Band. That's at 12:45. And then our first band of the day at 1 p.m., Finbar Fagan's Band. They do a lot of traditional Irish music. And then 3 p.m., Trinity Irish Dancers. I'm sure you're very familiar
Excellent.
With them. They've
of
been
course.
In the parade. And
they're world-renowned, as a matter
world-renowned.
Of fact.
Mm-hmm. Mark Howard is the founder and artistic director. And the Trinity Irish Dancers, you know, they've been marching in parades. They've been dancing all over the city. And I talked to some of the young girls at the Fish Fry last week. And I asked, how many times have you danced today? And they said, 17 times today.
No.
No, yes.
17 times.
17 times that day.
And they're still ready to go.
And they're
they?
Ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, they've got young, strong legs. You know,
That's right. And hearts and minds and all of that.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. And so they were pretty excited. And, of course, St. Patrick's Day is going to be a big, big day for them. So we have them at 3 o'clock. And then I'm not sure if you've heard of a band, the Chancey Brothers.
The Chancey Brothers?
No, they're on at 4 p.m. And the Chancey Brothers have been around since 2001, and they're inspired by Tommy Makem and the Clancy Brothers. And they play a lot of traditional Irish pub songs, but they also perform a lot of rock, R&B, and you might be able to get Bob Chancey to do a little bit of Elvis.
Ooh,
yeah.
I like that.
And so they have three albums, and their most recent album, Patriots and Immigrants, was just released. And so it's actually a really terrific CD. It's getting some play in the area. So you can stop in and see David, Bob, Greg, Brendan, and Joel Chancey, along with sister Katie Chancey.
Excellent.
And then at 6 p.m., the Gleasons travel all the way from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 90 miles away, where they are currently banning substances like Kerrygold butter.
Oh, I know. I
Can
heard.
Can you believe that?
I know. They want if it's not Wisconsin butter, they don't want it.
Right. They
but
won't recognize
are
it.
Are they specifically banning Kerrygold butter?
Well, actually, any butter that's imported from another country.
That's the one that people want.
I know. Right. Yes. I mean, what are they thinking? You know, maybe there should be some cardinal or papal dispensation, you know, for Kerrygold butter, especially during St. Patrick's Day. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the Gleasons have also been around since almost 2000, and they mix up a bit of Celtic songs with a bit of country, world music, and, of course, rock, and they have a wide range of original songs, and, of course, they sing many of the classics that you and I both know, Patty. And then if you didn't have enough dancing, we have the O'Hare School of Irish Dance coming on at 7:45.
Excellent.
And they're a competitive but also entertaining type of dance group.
From the neighborhood, I believe.
They are, and yeah. They actually started in Plymouth, Michigan, and they have, groups in Cleveland and Akron, and then Chicago was added in 1996.
Excellent.
And so excellent school of dance. And then a band that is near and dear to my heart, the Dirty Wellies.
Oh.
Have you heard of the Dirty Wellies?
I have. I own Dirty Wellies, but I don't know that.
Is that
I've,
okay.
I don't know if I've heard the Dirty Wellies.
Okay, well, at least you know what they are.
And
so,
absolutely.
Yeah, and I have a pair as well. And so Dirty Wellies are boots.
We my just favorite go, boots. Yeah,
yeah. Right. And so they're on at 8:30, and the Dirty Wellies, a fast-rising traditional Irish band based in Chicago. The band was actually formed in 2013 when several members were actually playing a session out in Brookfield. And it was the band was later expanded to add a couple members. And one of the most senior and seasoned members of the band is Frank Gleason. And Frank is on the cultural committee at the Irish American Heritage Center. He's a wonderful musician, a wonderful singer, and he's also a wonderful actor. But he's just a very warm human being from the old sod. And they focus, of course, on traditional Irish music, and it's not one that you want to miss. And then we cap off the night at 10:30 with the Great Whiskey Project. Have you heard of them?
I've not heard of the Great Whiskey Project. Something I participated in, but not necessarily.
that's right. Yeah, that's okay. Well, so the Great Whiskey Project, another Chicago-based band. They've been around not that long, since 2010, and they do a lot of traditional Irish music, a little bit of Johnny Cash, Gnarls Barkley, ooh, Elvis, and the White Stripes, maybe in any given set.
I love it.
And so they have dozens and dozens of original songs, and they're constantly writing, so I think you're going to hear a lot more from this band in the near future.
And I'm guessing Five Counties is open to the for consumption?
The fifth province.
What am I saying?
Five counties.
Wait,
it's four provinces, but then the fifth province.
Okay.
Yeah.
Four. I've got numbers in my head. So
yeah,
fifth province.
Right. Four and five. It's tax season. Of course you've got numbers in your
head.
All the
numbers.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Fifth province is going to be open.
It's going to be wide open.
And food as well? Or
food as well. Harrington's. Okay. Now, typically on a Friday, we'd be having our fish fry during the Lenten season. And because Cardinal Blaise Supich gave us dispensation on St. Patrick's Day, we can be very carnivorous on this Friday. So there's no fish fry, but Ken Harrington from Harrington's Deli, mm-hmm, is going to be serving up some of his great, great corned beef and cabbage and sandwiches and whatnot.
And they've got a great shop over there on Milwaukee Avenue by Bryn Mawr.
They do. You've been there.
Many times. It's where my bangers and mash for St. Patrick's Day is.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much. And before you go, we mentioned being able to track that. I want to make sure you've got everything you wanted to touch on as well. If we miss anything, tell me.
Your show is only 3 hours, so yeah. I mean, I could be here a long time. Have lots of material, but that's okay. I think we've got the gist of it.
The gist of it. Friday starting at noon, the Irish American Heritage Center opens festivities all day long. Where can people get more information on the website?
At irish-american.org, irish-american.org, and we're located at 4626 North Knox Avenue in Chicago, and you can buy your tickets ahead of time. The tickets are $10. Children 12 and under are free.
Excellent.
It's a great, great deal.
That's so much fun. And I also had mentioned the genealogy, and you said that Brian Donovan is one of the gentlemen that you can
He will help you trace your roots all the way back to the old side.
And his information is also available on the website?
It is, yeah. You can look for the genealogy page right on there.
Excellent. We want to have you back in studio soon.
Patty, I'll come back anytime you want.
The fact that you can use a microphone better than almost any guest I've ever had, I'm so grateful to you. Thank you. It's really been a pleasure to hang out with you, and have a great St. Patrick's Day.
And you do the same.
I'll see you on Friday.
Thank you.
More after this on 720 WGN.
Such a good time, I'm having a ball.
Don't stop me now.
If you wanna have a good time, just give me a call.
Don't stop me now.
'Cause I'm having a good time.
Don't stop me now.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and joining us on the phone is Tana Amon, who is the author, along with her husband, The Brain Warrior's Way and The Brain Warrior's Way Cookbook. How are you doing tonight, Tana?
Excellent, Patty. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Tell us a little bit about The Brain Warrior's Way.
So it's funny. The first thing people ask is, why would you call it The Brain Warrior's Way? Because we say it's a war. So, you know, just to give you a little reason why we say that, if you've ever been sick or taken care of somebody sick, you know it's a war, and you have to be armed and prepared and trained to win the fight of your life. That's really why we titled it that. And if you look around at everywhere you go, someone's trying to shove bad food down your throat that will kill you early. There are toxic messages every time you turn the news on. You know, there's gadgets that are trying to steal your attention. It's a war, but it's a war you can win. And it's actually one you can avoid if you're trained and prepared and aware and you know how to stay healthy. So that's our goal.
Well, that's the thing, is that when we get bad news or when we start feeling poorly, there's an inclination to kind of sink into it a little bit, isn't there? To kind of go, oh, this is happening.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Right. So rather than giving into this victim mentality, so as somebody who not only grew up very poor, but very sick. I was a very sick kid, had cancer 3 times in my 20s and 30s. And then, you know, also I've had to fight for that health. We have this tendency to have a victim mentality when things go wrong. And that's sort of human nature. But you don't have to give into that. You can train your mind and body to think and feel like a warrior, to be empowered. And that's really the goal. So I practice martial arts, and one of the reasons I love martial arts is for that reason, because it gives you this very empowered sense of, you know, being, of feeling, that you don't have to give in to feeling like a victim when things go wrong.
And you also talk a lot about restoring your memory. I'm looking at the website as well, and how to elevate your mood. So even if you're not feeling sick, and if you're, this is one way to also get ahead of something. It's both combative and preventive, isn't it?
It really is. So it's very interesting. That's why we come at it from so many different areas. We use this acronym MASTERY. So gaining mastery over your brain and body. And mastery is mindset, assessment, sustenance, which is the food, like eat to win, training, which is your daily habits, essence, which is turning your pain into purpose, responsibility, because it's not just about you, it's about generations of you, and years long. So it's really a whole process. And what we found is it's not just one thing. You have to come at it from a multi-mechanism approach. And when you do, our patients get much, much better. And lifestyle plays a critical role. Your diet, nutrition, your exercise, sleep, all of that plays this critical role in getting well and improving your memory.
I want to latch on to one thing you said there. Generations of you. What does that mean?
So it's very interesting. You know, our behaviors are addictive. People are addictive. So the people you hang around with, studies actually show that your longevity is determined by the people you hang around with, that your happiness is determined by your community. Obesity, diabetes, all these things are influenced by the people you spend time with. But likewise, your children and grandchildren are not only likely to adopt your behaviors, but they're going to get your genes. And you turn on or turn off certain genes according to what you eat, according to your behaviors, according to, you know, how you live your life, and you pass those on. So it's not just about you. It's about generations of you. It's your responsibility if you want to have, if you want to leave behind healthier generations.
It's a lot of pressure.
Right. So that's what we call appropriate anxiety.
It's what we call what? Anxiety?
Appropriate anxiety. So it's a healthy kind of anxiety to think about something beyond yourself.
See, I like that. Appropriate anxiety. I don't have enough of that in my life. Because, the idea being that if you have appropriate anxiety, then you are hopefully will appropriately deal with that.
Right. So what appropriate anxiety does is it keeps you making good decisions so that you don't have to pay consequences.
Right. Thankfully. But how many people are willing? I mean, it takes a while, and some people will try perhaps beginning the path toward the Brain Warrior's way, and if they stumble a little bit, some people will just give up and be like, well, that didn't work for me.
Yeah, we don't want you. I actually tell people I want them to take the word failure out of their vocabulary. So there's no failing. If you're on a program that's supposed to last forever and teach you to be empowered, there shouldn't be failing. So in martial arts, the first thing that I learned when I walked in the door was, they're like, pat up, we're going to teach you how to take a hit and a fall. Fall and how to get up safely, because falling is a normal part of practicing martial arts. But falling is a normal part of any program. It shouldn't be about failing. It should be about falling and getting back up quickly. You can fall down 100 times as long as you get up 101.
Oh, no doubt about that. And how long have you been doing martial arts?
So I've been doing it about 11, 12 years now.
Okay. So you weren't a kid. You weren't a kid when you started. It sounds like you started as an adult.
So I started as an adult. I was actually attacked when I was young. I was walking to high school, and just through, you know, I started. I took self defense training back then. But then as I got older and I had my own daughter, I thought, you know, I want her to grow up feeling very empowered. I was attacked walking to high school in the morning, and I'm like, I was a teenager, and I wanted my daughter to grow up with an example of a mother who was empowered in an environment that was empowering for her, so she did not feel that same sense of, just feeling vulnerable that way.
May I ask which expertise of martial arts you study?
So I started off in Taekwondo, and I now practice Kenpo.
That's what my son studies. He is a big fan of that. Okay. We tried a couple other.
Kenpo?
He does Kenpo karate.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it so much.
Do you know,
like therapy?
Just for a moment, and I'm going to take an aside here because we are talking to Tana Amen. How do I pronounce your last name? Amen?
Amen.
Amen. Yeah. Thank you very much. Because I could say it a bunch of different ways and just hope one of them was right. But it's probably the best to get the correct pronunciation. Yeah. She's written with her husband The Brain Warrior's Way. And also there's a cookbook. TheBrainWarriorsWay.com is where you can find out more information. But I wanted to ask you about training, because I think this kind of goes into what you're talking about, making a commitment to something. Do you? How often do you train in martial arts? How much of a commitment is that?
Well, it depends on what your goal is, like with anything else, right? So if you are, you're going to get out of it what you put into it. I have a black belt in each art, and so that took a lot of commitment. I think that you get out of it what you put into it. So to do that, I was training, 10 to 15 hours a week.
Right.
Just in martial arts. That didn't include other training, like my weight training and certain things like that. Maintenance is a little bit different. Once you get to a certain level, you might be able to just do a few hours a week, and then I still do a lot of other types of activities. But I love it so much that once you get to the point where you really get into it, it's no longer something you have to push yourself to do. And the same thing happens with your health. So you don't have to start off at that level. You can take baby steps until you master one step and take another step. Pretty soon you're going to find yourself submerged, and it won't feel like that chore anymore. You will look forward to it.
I agree. And the other thing is, as someone who has started martial arts as an adult, I think that that's also something that that translates to other aspects of what you're encouraging people to do. A lot of individuals will feel like, this is who I am. This is my lifestyle. I've done this my entire life. It's too late for me now anyway. What do you tell people who figure, it's just too late for them to get healthier?
Well, it's never too late. Number one, it's only too late if you don't want to live beyond where you're at.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're 80 and you want to live to be 90, then it's not too late, right? But if you only want to live to be 81, okay, then maybe it's too late. It depends on what your goals are.
Right.
So we have to change our mindset. It depends on, you have to reach beyond what you think your comfort zone is. And that's one of the things martial arts teaches you. And after having cancer 3 times, the thing I love about that whole warrior mindset is that the reason I love it so much is it is symbolic for me of not giving up, of never giving up, of never giving in, of fighting until the end. And that's really what we want people to think about. So whatever that is for you, the minute you think it's too late for me and you start the old person's talk, then it is too late for you. But if you want to live to be, 5 or 10 years older than where you are, then you better get serious.
I agree. I want to thank you so much. Before you go, what else do you want people to know about your book, The Brain Warrior's Way and The Brain Warrior's Way Cookbook?
So for anybody who thinks, that sounds too hard to be a warrior, you can be a peaceful warrior. My favorite quote in martial arts is when the warrior says to the master, "Why do you teach me to fight, but you speak of peace?" And the master replies, "Because it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. You just have to be trained. It doesn't mean you're going to have to engage."
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us for Wellness Wednesday. We've been talking to Tana Amen. You can go to her website. Amen. I got it. I just realized I said it incorrectly
you
again.
It.
Their website is it The Brain Warrior's Way?
They can just put in brainwarriorsway.com.
Excellent. Have a great evening. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And if you're ever in Chicago, come stop by the Allstate Showcase studio.
My husband's there now. I'll let him know.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'll wave if he goes by. Thank you so much, Dan. Have a great night.
Bye-bye.
More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me on the phone is Rich Lenkov, the more intelligent, better-looking half of Legal Face-Off, the fast, high-paced, high-energy legal program dealing with the hottest issues of the week, legal issues, as it were. And how are you doing tonight, Rich?
Good. Love the intro. How are you doing?
I'm very well. I got an email from my producer, Mike Heidemann, who is down in Austin, Texas at the South by Southwest festivities. And he said there's a documentary out that I had not heard of. But this week people are talking about some extra video that has now surfaced in this documentary about Michael Brown and the Ferguson riots and the story that captured the attention of the world. What is going on? I had no idea that there was another video.
Yeah, the name of the film that is playing in Austin at South by Southwest, where our friend and former Legal Face-Off producer, before he moved up in the world to take over the Patty Vasquez producer role, Mike Heidemann. The name of the film is called Stranger Fruit. It did premiere this week at South by Southwest. And in that film, there is a previously unreleased video from the convenience store where Michael Brown was before he was involved in this altercation where ultimately he was shot. And the video, depending on whose perspective you believe, either shows Michael Brown engaged in a bartering deal where he gave marijuana, small amounts of marijuana, to the convenience store clerk in exchange for a couple of boxes of cigarillos. Or the police and the prosecutors maintain that that's not what the video shows at all, that the filmmaker heavily edited it to show that there was this transaction, in fact, which didn't take place. So, you know, again, the documentarian is trying to show that this snippet of video proves that Michael Brown was innocent, that he wasn't, as previously reported, involved in an altercation at the convenience store. Instead, he was on good terms with the people at the convenience store to the extent that he was trading marijuana for some products.
Well, because the reason that the police officer was looking for someone like Michael Brown, wasn't there a call out that the convenience store had been robbed?
Correct. Exactly true. So the reason that part of the justification for the confrontation between the police and Michael Brown was that the police were called to this convenience store because Michael Brown was, or someone matching Michael Brown's description, was robbing it. And that, you know, in turn led to the altercation on the street that ultimately led to the shooting. So the relevance of this video would be, you know, if Michael Brown was not in fact robbing the store, but in fact, you know, having a barter with the store, then it changes the whole dynamic of the lead up to this confrontation. On the other hand, you know, a couple things the prosecutors are arguing and the police are arguing is, number one, the video is edited. It does show that there's this, you know, bag given, but the video, the rest of the video, also shows that this box of Cigarellos was put back on the shelf, so there wasn't an exchange. But more importantly, the prosecutors argue that it's really irrelevant. It's really irrelevant to what happened outside. Even if you believe that Michael Brown had this exchange with the store, what's really relevant is what happened outside. And remember, you know, this incident was investigated by the federal government. In fact, 40 FBI agents descended on Ferguson to review this altercation. And a state court reviewed it, both of whom decided that there was no basis for charging anyone. So, you know, even if the video does purport to depict this friendly altercation or this friendly exchange, you know, the prosecutors are arguing that it's really irrelevant to what happened outside. You know, remember, the police officer alleged that the shooting was justified because Michael Brown reached for the officer's gun.
Right. It doesn't change the circumstances of their altercation. Right.
Exactly. So, you know, it does change the narrative a little bit that the police have put forth so far. But, you know, my personal feeling is it doesn't change what the evidence outside the store showed. And, you know, there's two separate bodies that have investigated it quite extensively and determined that there was no evidence to charge anyone. So I don't feel like this video changes things much. It does seem like, you know, an attempt by the filmmaker to bring some attention to his film. You know, as someone who's produced documentaries myself, I don't particularly blame the guy for trying, but obviously in this circumstance, you know, you're dealing with life and death situations, you got to be careful how you put forth those things.
Has the prosecutor and the investigators had anything to say about this video, whether or not they had seen it previously as well, or how did the filmmaker even get a hold of this video?
Yeah, so yes, I mean, the prosecutors have come out very strongly, you know, today, this past week, defending the actions of the police, again, confirming that no one has been charged despite the fact that the feds and the state levels have both investigated the incident. They have explained, again, that the video that the filmmaker has put forth only depicts a portion and it's heavily edited, that, in fact, when you look at the entirety of the video, it actually confirms what they had, you know, allege that this wasn't some barter, that in fact Michael Brown was involved. So yeah, they have, you know, quite vigorously come out denying that this video shows what the filmmaker is arguing that it shows.
Well, again, you know, Michael Brown was both Michael Brown and Officer Wilson were prosecuted in the public opinion more than anything. I mean, obviously the riots were a culmination of not just what happened with Michael Brown, but institutionalized racism that many people believe has been going on in Ferguson. And, you know, part of the story was that this shop owner, convenience store owner, had called the police in regards to a robbery, and people were saying, well, if he hadn't robbed the store, he wouldn't be dead. I think that's part of why people are coming back to this story again. I mean, we'll continue to come back to this story because it is a pivotal moment in race relations in the United States, don't you think?
Yeah, there's no question. And you know, for those people who found the police actions to be excessive and the use of force unjustified, yeah, the fact that this video shows, or, you know, at least some portion of this exchange to be friendly, that does play into the narrative that Michael Brown was not the aggressor, was not involved in any altercation at the store.
Right.
Again, it doesn't change the evidence. And, you know, I was, when we covered this story extensively for Legal Face-Off, you know, we examined a lot of the evidence. The evidence just wasn't there that that this was an unjustified shooting. I mean, the evidence was that Michael Brown reached for the police officer's gun. The whole narrative about, you know, hands up, don't shoot, that wasn't, in fact, what happened. So there's a lot of emotion, obviously, involved in this shooting, and it did, to your point, reveal a lot of, a lot of issues involving civil rights and the use of force. But in this particular circumstance, the evidence just wasn't there that this was an unjustified shooting, in my opinion.
Well, we can hear more about that conversation then with you and your and the other guy, I think, is that what he prefers to go by?
That's his legal name at this point. But yeah, Jason Whiteside is the other guy.
He's going to find me someday in the parking lot and be like, could you just once say my name? Bill me equally for Legal Face-Off. Everyone can find that at WGN Radio, WGNplus.com. And look forward to having. I know it's been a while. Let's have you on soon and in studio whenever you have time.
I'll be coming in soon for sure. I would love to do that.
Look forward to it. Thank you again. That's Rich Lenkov. Go find Legal Face-Off on WGNplus.com. More after this. Have a great night, sir.
Thanks, Patty. You too.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. We have students from DePaul University. We have Andrew and Brooke joining us in the studio. Hey, Andrew, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm excited. I don't think anyone has come in the studio and been as excited as you two are, and I want to thank you both for that. Hi, Brooke. How are you doing?
Good. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Yeah, this is our Allstate Showcase studio. Andrew, where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Houston, Texas. Then I moved to Cleveland for high school, and now I'm here for school at DePaul.
And what are you studying at DePaul?
Public relations and advertising.
Oh, excellent. This is cool.
Yes,
I'm thrilled to have you in studio because we were talking a moment ago about whether or not you listen to what we call terrestrial radio. And you were saying without a car, you tend to listen to podcasts and things.
Right, right.
But now I've told you can listen to us on iHeartRadio.
Yes. And I will be getting the app.
and everything I've ever said and all of our hosts here at WGN Radio, everything is available on WGNRadio.com as well.
We have pushed it to our Facebook friends. Say,
oh, thank
listen
you.
To us live.
Yes.
Online.
Please
hey,
do. And Brooke, where are you from originally?
I'm from Des Moines, Iowa.
And you say that as though go ahead and yeah. mess with me. I'm telling you right now.
I love Iowa.
I love Iowa too.
Yeah.
I'm a stand-up comic, so I worked all over all over Iowa and Council Bluffs. I'm trying to think of all the places
yeah,
that I played.
Bluffs.
I played a lot of towns. All over.
Iowa was a great place.
Cedar Rapids, Cedar Falls, and then I would always be nervous that I would say the wrong town.
Right.
Because they're not that far away from each other. They're right
That's
down
true.
The road.
Mm-hmm.
So
That's
I would
true.
I would get very nervous. And Iowans are particular about making sure that you're, you know.
It's true.
And no one likes to be talked down to, you know. And people do that to Midwesterners a lot. When you say you're from Houston, Andrew, do people give you a hard time about being from Texas?
Not so much because, I tell people I'm from Houston and Cleveland, and then I get a lot of crap for being from Cleveland.
More than Houston?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And people always ask me which one I liked more. So I say Cleveland. I really did like Cleveland a little bit more.
What was it about Cleveland you liked better?
It's a little more accepting and the arts are really alive and appreciated there. So yeah,
I can see that. And what brought you to, what made you choose DePaul, Brooke?
I think it was Chicago, honestly. Yeah, and there was a lot of reasons why I came here, but I remember walking down this street in Lincoln Park when I was like a high school senior, like, what am I going to do? And I was just like, walk. I was like, I can see myself here. And then lo and behold, 3 years later, I'm still here.
It's like getting a crush on a town. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about Tough to Be Tough.
Okay, so Tough to Be Tough is a campaign at DePaul, and it's focusing on mental health awareness. And so our goal is to acquaint students with the message of Campaign to Change Direction, which mm-hmm. is a nonprofit organization which raises awareness for the 5 signs of emotional distress.
Okay.
And so our goal is to connect students with the resources at DePaul and to notice the 5 signs in themselves and then also notice the 5 signs in their friends as well.
Okay. Hey, Andrew, what are the 5 signs?
The 5 signs are poor self-care, agitation, hopelessness, personality change, and withdrawal.
And this, I mean, college is a big change. I would say for me when I was a freshman, agitation was probably the one that
I'm a very agitated yeah. person most of the time.
Yeah, people would lock themselves in their dorm rooms when they knew that I had been pushed to my limits.
Yeah.
you notice a short fuse. And this isn't just for students, this is for anybody.
Yeah.
So what are some of the steps that students want, if they're willing to identify that in themselves, because people are often worried about feeling sounding weak if they ask for help. Are students the same way?
Yes, that's actually what our research showed us. So we did some secondary and primary research, and our research came up that a lot of underrepresented groups, particularly, there was this whole stigma around like just be tough, like to get mm-hmm. through it, and that's where the name Tough to Be Tough started. So yeah, definitely, there's this like culture of like.
Gut it out.
Yeah. Exactly.
Walk it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to go off of that too, we really found that a lot of people kind of like misdiagnose it in themselves. So they'll just be like, oh, I'm just overworked. Oh, I've had too much homework. And then they really don't take time to focus on, hey, maybe I should really be taking care of myself. And this becomes more of an issue. So the idea is connect them with resources now so it doesn't become a problem later down the road as well.
And how did you get involved with Tough to Be Tough?
So we're both public relations majors, and the public relations program at DePaul participates in something called the Bateman Case Competition. And it's a year-long case competition where PRSSA, the Public Relations Student Society of America, a national organization, gives you a brief and a client. And, mm-hmm. Of course, you have to sign up to be in the competition. They give you a brief and a client. And then from that, the students, us, the two of us and our 3 other team members, we did the research on the client, on the problem of mental health within like Chicago and specifically within the DePaul community. And then so we do the research, the planning, implementation, and evaluation of a full live public relations campaign.
And Brooke, what has been the response on campus? Are students feeling as though?
It's been incredible. When we started, I think we were a little bit nervous that people wouldn't like kind of understand our message, but we have a lot of really exciting kind of tactics that we've used to really garner attention. And one of those is we created a five foot by five like sort of kindergarten corner, and it was called the Cozy Corner. And the Cozy Corner is basically this corner that is has like chalkboard walls.
Okay.
And in the corner, there's like coloring sheets, there's beanbag chairs, there's Jolly Ranchers. And the idea is when people come and stop by the corner, they come and write down what they're stressed about, or like maybe like what they're excited about, or something that's what their favorite form of self-care is. And it's become, and it kind of traveled around campus. So it spent a day in like the gym, and it spent a day in the student center, and it went to the dorms. And so it really became kind of like this living and breathing part of DePaul's campus. And people were tweeting about it, and it became something where people came up and they're like, oh, now I'm having this chance to not only talk about self-care and my own mental health, but mm-hmm. I'm also thinking about my own mental health in the future and how I can connect with the resources on campus. So it was a really great way to start that conversation with students. So that was really cool. And we also did a comfort food cook-off.
Oh, hello.
It was fantastic. I mean, about like 120 or so people stopped by, and basically people brought their favorite comfort food, and then organizations voted on who brought the best comfort food. And I don't know. I think we had a...
What was your favorite, Andrew?
I'm not gonna lie, it was the hamburger sliders I actually made myself. They were really good.
I looked all around and I decided I was the winner.
Yes,
of the best.
I thought the enchiladas were a little bit better.
Wow. Well, it depends. Well, if being from Houston originally, yeah, maybe he's had enough, yeah, of the Mexican,
yes,
food.
Yes, true. Mexican, yeah, is my favorite.
But
food.
But he did make food. I bought food. So
where did you buy your food from?
Domino's.
All right. Look, Tom, our producer, is like, yep, the thin crust. That really crispy thin crust is very good. You mentioned the kindergarten corner and people writing things down and then tweeting it out. How much has social media been a part of the Tough to Be Tough program?
Huge. The Cozy Corner was our biggest tactic, and that's really how we got the word out, since it was so large and so shareable. It was like our Instagrammable moment, if you will. Mm-hmm. So we ourselves and some of our friends and then just people in general, they would take a picture and post it on their Facebook or their Twitter or their Instagram, and maybe even Snapchat and Instagram story now. And they would use the hashtag Tough to Be Tough. So that really helped us generate a lot of reach.
I have to take a break here. I want to see if you guys will hang out a little bit. We have we actually have the proprietor of a restaurant and locations in the area near DePaul that I want to introduce you guys to. Carissa Schaefer of Knife and Tine is here tonight.
Ooh, I've been there.
Have you? It is
food.
Oh my God, it's some of the best food. Everyone knows it's my place to go. 1417 West Fullerton Avenue, not far from DePaul. Yeah. More after this on 720 WGN. This is perfect for our guest we have in the studio. You're listening pretty late. Before we talk to them again, because we are going to talk to them some more, Brooke and Andrew are in studio with me. The Chicago Tribune wants you to know your favorites in Chicago. They want to know your favorites in Chicago dining. Vote now through March 22nd at chicagotribune.com/dining awards and release your inner food critic. Joining me in studio are DePaul students Andrew and Brooke, and they're helping students realize that they might be at risk. And the program is called Tough to Be Tough. Is this national or is this specifically to DePaul University?
So our campaign Tough to Be Tough is specifically to DePaul, but our client Campaign to Change Direction, they are a national nonprofit. So all the schools that are participating in the Bateman Case Challenge have like a competition, so it is nationwide, but we're our subdivision.
Well, is this something you thought of, like, because, you know, when you come to college, you have all these ideas of what it's going to be like. Did you struggle in the first semester?
Yeah, I did. You know, I think something that Andrew and I can both relate to is we're both out-of-state students, mm-hmm. and especially coming to a big city like Chicago, it's a totally different ball game when you come here. And I saw a lot of the five signs on myself now, like 3 years later, I'm learning this, but it's crazy how you think about, and we the case competition, you get to choose like a target audience of people you want to focus on. So some campaigns in other states are focusing on like elderly populations or mm-hmm. elementary school students, but we really felt like we were in a really great position with DePaul and how they had so many great resources that we could really leverage in our campaign. Mm-hmm. And we thought also just like the networks that we have, and that for college students, mental health is such a issue that people are really talking about right now at school, and really, you know, let's use that and let's work with that. And it's been really pretty incredible.
Yeah. And again, like, tell people this is, because I think this is important for everyone, not just students, but what are the five signs once more?
Poor self-care, agitation, hopelessness, personality change, and withdrawal.
And personality change, I mean, that's something that people will tell you, don't you think, more than... I mean, people don't generally go, I'm not the person I was last year.
Yeah.
That's something that kind of happens over time.
And something that Campaign to Change Direction really talks a lot about is the ability to see the five signs not only in yourself, but seeing them in your friends.
Okay.
And a really big part of our campaign has been not only to encourage people to reach out. So when you do see a really close friend of yours that has a personality change, reach out. Because something that we really have talked about with the Campaign to Change Direction is that their big goal is to equate physical health with mental health. And so like when your friend falls in PE, you know to take them to the nurse. But when you see a friend who's kind of like exhibiting like different signs or not totally themselves, we don't really know what to do.
Yeah.
And that's kind of our goal, is to give people the next step. So what do you do next?
So this is not just for the individuals themselves that might be struggling, but the people in their lives, because it could be easy. If you see someone who's agitated or they have a different personality, the tendency, as I mentioned in my dorms, was to run away from me. Mm-hmm. And, and you know, also possibly appropriate.
Yeah.
Save yeah. themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Run for your lives. Yeah. But, I mean, I think I kind of knew at the time, but there weren't necessarily resources. I didn't seek any in counseling. That's what I eventually sought. And I did because I knew that I was really starting to withdraw from everything. Mm-hmm. Do students have a hard time seeking counseling on campus?
Yeah, they do. And the tactic that we've gone with and the message we've gone with is almost like counseling isn't your only option. There's other offices at DePaul. Yeah. There's the Office of Health Promotion and Wellness. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a faculty member that you're really close with, a professor or the advisor to one of your clubs. So you can go to them and talk to them and they can like direct you to the proper resources. So you're not like in it alone, really.
Are you how closely are you working with faculty members?
Very, very closely. Yes, they've been some of our biggest allies in the campaign. Yeah.
Shout out to Maria and the HEAT team. Yes. We have a little shout out to them.
Excellent. Because I don't think it would have occurred to me to talk to a TA or a professor or anybody else, really. I remember one time I got into a conversation. I was struggling with faith when I was at the University of Illinois. And I had never met atheists.
Right.
In my entire life, I had never met. It didn't occur to me that there were people who just didn't believe in God at all. Mm-hmm. And I was dating somebody who was, and I had been in a relationship with him for a while and he didn't believe in God. And I was like, well, this seems important too. And, I kind of lost it a little bit. And I was talking to a TA and she was an atheist too. And she's like, well, why does there need to be a God? You know, why is it so important to you? And it was like completely the wrong person to be talking to. And I think that it sounds like you're working with faculty to kind of be aware if somebody is having that kind of a crisis to be supportive and point them in the wrong direction rather than sort of impose your sort of point of view on them.
Yes.
And so for this campaign, we spent about 10 weeks just solely doing research to kind of get our head around the culture of mental health, not only in the world, but at DePaul. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we really found throughout our research was that mental health is not something you have to go out alone. And mental health is done well and done best when we have a community around us. And so our goal really throughout Tough to Be Tough has been to create a community of mental health awareness and create a community of self-care to encourage people that, you know what, talk to your friends about this, talk to your faculty advisor, talk to your parents. There is somebody out there that's here to help you.
And that was going to be my next question about parents. How do you get them involved? Because I probably would have had a hard time telling my parents I was in trouble.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's also that element of shame or fear.
Right. Yeah. Well, some of the stuff we found through our research is parents may be great for one student, but parents might not be so great for the other student. So the message we pushed is know who your ally is and who you can talk to, and that's your best bet. Yeah.
How do you identify an ally?
Someone that you can talk to. Mm-hmm. Someone that you feel like you can have a difficult conversation with. And for some people that may be Andrew sitting across from me, or for other people it might be their mom. Mm-hmm. And it really just depends on the person. But that's kind of the big reason too of why we encourage students to connect them with resources, because for some students they may not really know who their ally is. And for those students, that's why there's offices, there are third parties, there's the Office of Health Promotion and Wellness, there's campus counseling services that's there to really help connect them with someone who's there to listen to them.
It sounds like you guys have really gotten involved. This is a great program. What can you tell parents who maybe right now they're listening and their kids are off at college? What can they say to their kid next time they talk to them on the phone or visit with them?
I think the number one thing to do is show your child that's at college that you support them and that you're really proud of them, and know that college right now is different than college has ever been. It's crazy expensive. We're all so stressed out, and just in the age of social media and the time we're living in, it's just a very hard time for a lot of us, since we're the first group going through this new idea of what college is. So I would just tell parents that they should reach out to their kids, say hey, I'm thinking about you, I'm really proud of you, I love you, I'm always here. Maybe send them a little something in the mail. And I'm telling you,
I was going to say that. A care pack. I was just going to ask you what the value and worth of it, because I think that everybody loves to receive something that tells you that someone's thinking about you when they're away from you.
Well, my dad, he travels every week for business. He's traveling and he's on the road about 85% to 90% of the time. So he'll send me postcards or letters from the hotels and the places he's at. And I just like to get those. And it's just exciting to get stuff for my parents.
Yeah.
Because like Brooke said, we're both out-of-state students. Yeah. So we don't really get to see our parents a lot. And our communication is through the phone, and FaceTime is great and everything. But it still like shows that your parents care. And we might not respond right away or be able to write you a card back due to time and studying and all this stuff, but we really appreciate it. We love it.
What kind of stuff do you get in the mail?
Oh my! So this is so embarrassing, but you know, let's tell the world. My parents always send me toilet paper because okay, I complain all the time. Toilet paper in the city is expensive.
It's expensive, and you have to carry
it
back.
Small.
I've never. Carissa, are you familiar with how expensive our toilet paper is?
Yes.
Yeah.
You guys go to DePaul. Do you have to go to the 7-Eleven?
Yeah.
Oh, I go to Target.
And the rolls are like super small. Like it will last me like maybe like 2 days. But my parents, they like go to Costco and they like send me like this big box of like Costco toilet paper, and it'll last me forever. And so I get that, and then they also send me like a lot of like baked goods that my mom does not make because she does not cook, but she like gets them and they're really good.
I feel like comparison shopping right now online to find out. You're finding that
it's super expensive. Yeah. When I was in college, I actually went to Illinois State University, and we would just steal toilet papers from the different restaurants. Don't do that at my restaurant,
well,
please.
Sometimes we take it from the student center.
Do not.
That is, I've done that.
I mean,
DePaul. Yeah, but like game changer getting toilet paper from your parents.
I would say so.
Yeah. All right, so anybody who has a student going to school in Chicago, please send them toilet paper. Yeah. Let's take a break here and more with our guests. Knife and Tine is in the house. The Arrogant Frog, they have some great event, a great event for the Beauty and the Beast movie release. They're turning, we'll let Carissa tell you about the magic that's happening at the Arrogant Frog. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, hanging out with Andrew and Brooke. They're DePaul University students, and they have been telling us about tough to be tough and making sure that students are taking care of themselves, acknowledging that they might be vulnerable to emotional and physical situations at school, and to, you know, face that. You don't have to gut it out. No, this isn't a challenge, you know, of your soul. And Carissa Schaefer is here to soothe my soul with fantastic food, as
and
always.
Drinks.
I know.
Jesse's taking a hot minute.
I love Jesse's giggle. She's like, tea. I have to say that my palate has improved for the better because of our relationship.
Aww.
Your restaurant is that by which I judge everyone else in the world, including the cocktails.
Mm.
When you established Knife and Tine, you had come out of various restaurants. You have a wide range of experiences. You knew what you wanted to do, and I love that you accomplished what you set out to do.
Thank you.
It's such a great destination. And so tell us now, you have a new location as well.
So,
you have two new locations. We've talked about Concord 55.
Yeah, so we have the restaurant. It's almost 3 years.
Wow. Has it been 3 years?
Yeah, we've been friends for 3 years.
Since that night you were doing live band karaoke?
Yeah, rough.
This girl tweeted at me because we ordered Domino's pizza on the air. And she said, next time, call me. And we did. And we said, well, we would love to have you.
And she had me on and then immediately made me sing karaoke.
I love it.
So
can I sing karaoke?
Absolutely. We can go to Peace. That band, the live band karaoke, plays at Peace Pizza.
Okay, we have to go there one of these days. Mm-hmm. We have to bring Charles, though.
Absolutely. God, he kills
it. Big balls
it.
Were the best. Am I at least? Oh. Sorry.
No, the song.
It's a song.
No, because he's got the biggest balls of all.
Yeah, he does.
All right, that's it. You're cut off.
We haven't started drinking yet.
I've only been eating food. It's not my fault. I'm also giddy about the gift we got from Ravinia. We'll talk about their schedule in just a little bit. But they have sent me a lovely gift. So thank you, Nick, from Ravinia. Can't wait to see Willie Nelson and Alanis Morissette and John Mellencamp and Santana and Tony Bennett and Michael Bolton with last night and
Stevie
Aretha
Nicks.
Franklin and Stevie Nicks.
Aretha
all this.
Franklin. Oh.
I'm saying all these things are happening, and Stephen Stills with Judy Collins. Anyway, also I think Stevie Nicks. Okay, but you have an amazing event that I'm excited about. I get to go to the movies with you again this weekend.
I know. Although last Sunday was pretty amazing.
It was great. We saw Get Out.
We did see Get Out. Have you guys seen that?
No, but I want to see it.
Oh,
really
it's so good.
Mm-hmm. I really want to go.
You must. And the first black director to ever reach $100 million.
Yes.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It was such a good movie. Mm-hmm. I at one point I actually got startled and screamed, and Patty just laughed at me.
I did not laugh
you
at
laughed
you.
Laughed at me.
I was tell the truth. I fell asleep for a few minutes only because I was so fatigued.
I wasn't gonna rag
okay.
you out.
No,
literally me.
And here's
she,
the thing.
She I had ran the stairs seconds, that day.
I did the stair
over
climb.
And she was like out. And I was like, oh, yeah. All right.
Sorry to anyone
she
who
got
sat.
Out.
In my, yeah, I did.
I'm not funny.
I wanted to tell Nick D. Esmeralda that when he said that he went outside and it was like the Revenant. It was like Revenant during the snowstorm. I'm like, he needed to call that get in. No, I'm sorry. See what I did there?
You're a comedian.
I've been amazing. Waiting 24 hours to joke. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's a terrible
Leo.
Joke. But I have heard great things about the movie Beauty and the Beast. I'm
yes.
fascinated by this. I did not realize that the Beast is played by the guy who was on Downton Abbey.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
I'm pretty sure I'm right
really?
About that. I could be wrong.
Well, Ariana Grande sings the song, so it can't
that's,
be bad.
That's all Andrew
well,
needs right
there.
Well, what are you doing at the Arrogant Frog? And what is Jesse doing? Because I smell so many wonderful
Jesse's
things.
Jesse's making some delicious cocktails over here. So we're actually so doing a Be Our Guest brunch over at the restaurant at Knife and Tine. And so she's making one of the signature cocktails of the evening.
Okay.
Of the brunch.
Mm-hmm.
So she will.
Hey, I brunch at night, so I'm not judging what you
I mean,
decide.
We're brunching at night right now, and that's okay.
That's correct.
So she'll talk a little bit more about her cocktail, but yeah, Beauty and the Beast brunch mm-hmm. at the restaurant. So half of our restaurant is going to be a princess parlor. So straight out of the movie, we're going to have gray stuff. It'll be delicious. It's going to be lovely. And then the other half of the restaurant is going to be Gaston's Tavern. So there's a lot of, you know, antlers and animals and egg eating and beer drinking. So so it's great for all ages. It's great for adults who want to come and, you know,
I'll see if
drink some beer.
I'll see if Griffin wants to come.
I love
you have
this.
To decide where you want to go, though, if you're going to sit in the Princess Parlor or Gaston's Tavern.
I'm pretty sure Griffin's.
All the way.
Princess?
Yes, that's me.
All right. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that Griffin's going to want to sit in the Gaston's.
I'll go where the hot yeah. boys are.
It's obviously Gaston's Tavern. They're super hairy, and there's, like, a lot of egg eating. It's going to be really great.
Sounds like my scene.
Perfect. Get that.
Yes.
Get
perfect.
That.
And I heard a rumor. The Belle, in fact, will be there making guest appearances. So yeah, it's gonna be pretty precious.
It is Dan
Emma
Stevens,
Watson
by the way.
Herself.
Dan Stevens from Downton Abbey is the Beast in the movie.
You
know what was interesting about that was when he left the series, he wanted to leave Downton Abbey, yeah. and I thought, and then you didn't hear from him for a while, so I was like, oh, that was a weird choice. And now he's going to be in one of the biggest movies. Mm-hmm. And clearly, they've been making this for a while because it takes a lot of work. They have to do, you know, whatever the sort of special effects that are involved with the movie. And I liked the animated film. I've only seen it once.
Why?
I know.
Why?
Because I was just Mermaid and yeah. Beauty and the Beast were. I didn't watch a lot of. Have we ever talked about this? I'm not a.
Are you
huge,
about to break my heart?
No, animated films.
Oh,
were never.
I was too.
Yeah, never yeah. really into animated films. Yeah, and you know what I think broke me was probably Bambi.
Well,
when you're a child and you start worrying about your mom being killed by hunters, and you don't quite understand that your mother is not a deer, it was terrifying.
Well, was Lion King before or after Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah, I want to say it was definitely after.
Beauty and the Beast was 1989, and it was the first animated film ever nominated for Best Picture.
Ooh, I love
and
this.
And then The Lion King was 1992, 93.
Are you something. Reading that, or do you know that?
No, he
I
knows
literally
that.
Just know that off the
oh
top
my
of my head.
Yeah, so he was not looking at
these
that.
Are real facts. Not
real
facts.
Wow.
All right.
Real news.
Alternative facts.
Tom Holland just gave us Jesse's like, what's happening? I have to give her headphones. So that she can share in the conversation that the Tom Hush just gave us a bunch of. Did I say Holland?
You did say Holland.
What? Who's Tom Holland?
I'm pretty sure he is like an actor.
Yeah.
Oh.
He's the new Spider-Man. I'm pretty sure.
She got you confused.
Don't quote me on that.
This
don't
is alternative facts.
He just unleashed a big barrel of Disney information that he just had stowed away that we did not realize. We scratched at something fantastic right there. Yeah, I was not a big Little Mermaid. I've also seen only once. And I'm breaking her. I would say that every animated film I've only seen once, except until you get to Toy Story. And I've seen that not just because of my kids, but I love Toy Story.
Okay, so we're going to have a slumber party. You're going to come over.
We've talked about this for years. Stop teasing me with the slumber party story. We've talked about like doing a movie night.
I know.
All these things.
Well, now we could do a Disney movie
night. There's a movie that Dr. Charles Turk always makes fun of me for not having seen. There's with the horse pulling at the nope, I don't know. Labyrinth? I haven't seen Labyrinth.
What?
Yeah, that's happening too.
What?
What's the one?
Tom's about to get on the front of a TV.
No, I missed it.
I've seen a lot of movies. Trust me, a lot of television. There are just certain weird ones. Like I've never seen Goonies.
What?
Oh, I've never seen that, Patty.
I
think it's a little.
I gotta start writing these down.
Well, that's not the story of the evening.
Beauty
and the Beast and the event at the Arrogant Frog is this Saturday and Sunday, March 18th and 19th. Tell us where the Arrogant Frog is.
So the Arrogant Frog is steps away from the lovely Knife and Tine restaurant. So it is on Fullerton, just east of Southport. So we just bought it and added it to our portfolio.
Congratulations.
So we now have a bar.
And Jesse, you have made a lovely cocktail. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you've concocted for us for this event?
So we're calling this cocktail the Enchanted Rose.
Oh, the Enchanted Rose.
Mm-hmm. No. Jesse, please.
No, we're not telling.
No, there's not actually roses in here.
No, there's no roses. Cause
okay, yes, I'm allergic, yes.
Yeah.
As we discovered on the air one night, yes.
Oh, no.
After we poisoned her.
And then Patty swallowed her swollen tongue.
Oh, my God. Why is that not happening tonight?
It's better than the thick tongue. Never mind. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So while there's no roses.
Actually, that's not true. Go ahead.
While there's no roses in this beverage, there is rosé.
Ooh.
So it's pretty easy drinkable. If it was summer, it'd be a little patio pounder here. We added...
It can be.
It could be. It would be for me. Though. So that's fine.
So it's kind of like a sweet sangria. Not a sweet, because sangria is sweet by its nature, but there's this is lighter than a sangria.
It's lighter. There's no added sugars or anything like that. It's all pretty straightforward. It's all booze, but still really light. It has rosé in there, and then a little bit of elderflower liqueur. We also have some raspberry liqueur and then grapefruit bitters kind of round it out.
Excellent. Well done. Mm. So you have one part of the Arrogant Frog is going to be...
It's actually Knife and Tine.
Oh, it's at Knife and Tine.
Yeah.
Okay. I got confused.
That's okay.
Excellent. So
we're doing some Gaston stuff.
Right, because you have the kitchen there. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Dur. Just saying.
I know. It's what happens.
And then you have brought also... this lovely pork slider.
Oh, it's so good.
And, it's a Friday. And Andrew was asking if it was Texas cornbread, and I don't know what that means, with the difference between Texas cornbread.
So, yeah, give me the rundown.
So there's, like, Texas cornbread, and then there's other southern cornbread. Other southern cornbread is more like,
nobody else gets to have their label on it. Just Texas and others.
I think it's, like, Georgia, actually.
Maybe.
I'll toss it to Georgia, but there's like Georgia style and then Texas. So Georgia's like more moist, and then Texas cornbread is really like dry and crumbly. So this is actually like Georgia cornbread.
Oh.
It's not Texas.
So you like dry and crumbly?
I'm bad. I'm a bad Texan. I actually like the more moist kind, so I prefer the Georgia.
I mostly love that he has said moist twice on the show.
Yeah.
And there are people who don't like that word, and I
actually wasn't
why.
Creeped out.
I apologize to the people that don't like that word. I have no beef with it though, so
oh, I do.
Do you really? Well, because it's supposed to mean you're supposed to talk about cake and cornbread and things with the words like moist.
But then people ruin it.
There are people that will ruin it. And right now there are people that go, oh, and they just flinch.
Sorry, we triggered you.
You know who's not flinching? Truck drivers. They can handle the word moist. They don't have problems with that. They're like, yeah, say it again, Patty. All right, I'm going to say moist just for the truck drivers. That happened. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com. More with our guests when we come back. But first, here's the news with Rob Martyr. She's real. She's Chicago. She's Robin Baumgarten. Watch Robin and the rest of the WGN Morning News team weekdays 4 to 10 on Chicago's very own WGN-TV.
Tale as old as time, true as it can be, barely even friends, then somebody bends unexpectedly.
honestly, I've only seen this movie once, but I'm getting the chills listening to Angela Lansbury, who's one of the greatest actresses of all time.
There's, she won a Grammy, didn't she? For the song?
That song, the Back one checker. That was in the movie, was only recorded once, from what I...
She did, she's got before, one take Angela?
Yep.
Yeah. Get it, girl?
Wow.
Get
That's
it.
That's all she needs.
She's a rock star. Yeah, she is one she of the is. Most... And if you go back and watch her, like, there's a movie called Gaslight from the 1940s. Oh, yeah.
So you've seen Gaslight, but you haven't seen
Beautiful. Stop it.
You haven't seen Gaslight?
You haven't
Come
seen
on.
Goonies.
See Gaslight.
Have you seen Gaslight?
We'll add it to our sleepover.
We'll do a different sleepover. We'll do one. We'll do a Disney night, and then we'll do a, you know, maybe an Angela Lansbury night. She played, when she was almost the same age as Elvis Presley, she played his mom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's had quite the career. And we are talking about Angela Lansbury because we are talking about Beauty and the Beast, which comes out this week. And to celebrate the premiere of the movie, Knife and Tyne, in conjunction with the Arrogant Frog.
Yeah, we're having a party.
And now we are, because Esmeralda's here. It's a party. They're going to be hosting a Beauty and the Beast special spectacular event. The entire restaurant will be decked out as guests on. Jesse, tell us a little bit about what's planned for the cocktails and the menu. Come on closer to your
mic. Well, first you'll have to come to experience the whole event, but we do have some fun specials that are kind of just a little playoff of our traditional menu that are Beauty and the Beast themed, and then the cocktail that we're making for the weekend is a rosé cocktail based on the magical enchanted rose that surrounds the movie.
I love this.
Hannah is going to be doing craft time.
Okay.
We have Beauty and the Beast crafts like, going on.
Crafts? Yes. We're getting crafty.
Is there glitter involved?
Yeah. One of the things does have glitter, yes.
Good, I'll be there.
I might be there Saturday and Sunday.
I don't see why not.
All right, then.
Well, you should probably go one day for Princess Parlor, hang out, make some crafts, and the other day just come kind of get a little drunk at Gaston's.
So Saturday with Griffin, Sunday with you.
Sounds good. I don't see why not.
I don't know if Griffin's going to be up for it. I don't know. He's never seen Beauty and the Beast.
The original?
The original.
Why?
I'm a terrible mother.
Child abuse.
Oh, wow. Wow, this is hardcore.
Oh, my God. Yikes. What a turn.
I've taken him to Ravinia. He has seen Bonnie Raitt live. I'm just saying.
That is not making things
last
better.
Last year, he saw Bonnie
Raitt. Is not making things better.
All right, then.
I don't even know who Bonnie Raitt is.
I don't know who that is.
I don't even know who that is.
Let's give him something to talk about, right?
Tom, before we have to take leave of our guests, and actually you can hang out as long as you want, but we have to play some Bonnie Raitt for you.
Yes, please.
It would be an honor.
I'm talking about Ravinia because they've given us the entire schedule, and everyone should go to Ravinia's website and find out about this incredible. We're gonna talk about this all week. So tonight it is Beauty and the Beast and our friends from DePaul University.
Oh, but I'm also excited about La La Land.
And La La Land's gonna be at Ravinia.
Yeah.
Is it like the show?
They're gonna play the.
It's like
movie.
A sing along.
Yeah, and then they're going to do like the orchestra.
And they'll have screens.
I've only seen La La Land four times.
I have not seen La La Land.
Might as well see the fifth.
Don't let Brooke hear Surprise. This, but you're not missing out from not seeing it.
Disagree.
My mother is with you. My mother, you have to see Moonlight. That's the best movie of the year. So apparently,
talk Oscars. I'm ready.
She saw. My mom agreed with the Oscar voters, and there you go. And you agreed with Warren Beatty.
My last name is Beatty. He was confused, poor guy.
A direct descendant right here.
How weird would that be? Although you never know. You might be Shirley MacLaine reincarnated concurrently with who she is. It'd be weird. I'm sorry. I made that all very strange. So how many times have you seen Beauty and the Beast, Jesse?
Too many. I know all the words to most Disney movies. So there's that.
Okay.
I don't know. I recently just watched it. I have a bootleg copy that I bought in Mexico. It's Bella
We're
gonna
y la tell
Vista.
The FBI.
Wait a second. Wait a second. That? The new one?
No. It's the original.
You bought a bootleg copy of the movie from 19.
That's been out on DVD for
decades.
It was really cheap. I couldn't not buy
it. Like what? Like 50 cents?
You could find it for free online.
It was around the time that Yes Man came out, and the person I was dating picked that one, but it was called Si Señor. So
that was when it was time to break up with him.
Pretty much.
That was your indicator.
Deal breaker. No, Señor.
I don't know what's happening.
No, man.
Producer Tom Hush is trying to track. He's trying to track. You're trying to go back. First of all, bootleg copy, I think, is when somebody actually kind of like films it in the theater. Is it the kind of version that you have?
It was
copy to copy.
It was copy to copy.
Okay.
It was definitely printed out.
So you mostly have it now and talk about it because it's sort of this moment in your life that you had to have it.
I needed it.
See, I'm tracking.
There was the also drink at all.
Tom has the brain of a man who's like, "Why would you do that?" Whereas I'm like, "Oh, she wants to remember that guy that she left in Mexico."
Yes, ma'am.
Si, señor.
Well, I had to bring a souvenir back. There was a man, like, you know how, you know, you want to buy a watch and he opens up his coat door. It was pug puppies. No joke.
Like,
and
alive?
I was like, what? Yeah. And I was like, I don't know what to do. I'm in the middle of Mexico. I can't bring all these back. So I bought a bootleg copy.
I just figured out we were in Mexico. I thought we were in Chicago.
No, yeah, it was Mexico.
No, well, we were in Mexico for a while.
They have dead pugs in a coat? Why do you think they would be dead pugs?
No.
He said, were they alive?
No,
he's right. I mean, like, you don't expect that to be in a coat.
Well, no, I'm just saying, I would have somehow gotten all of them and shoved them in my suitcase. Yeah. They would have all come home. They probably would have been dead by the time we got there.
This all got very strange.
Was that a scene from 101 Dalmatians?
Is it like that story in a good way?
Esmeralda. Refreshing.
New.
A little too strong.
We are piecing this all together. Okay. Again, let's make sure, because I'm going to take a break in a moment to, We have a interview with Rick Bayless.
I am so excited. So excited to be in the studio for
this. It was wonderful. I can't believe I haven't posted the selfie yet. I guess that was kind of stupid of me. I should have promoted that we were going to have Rick Bayless on tonight. But it'll be podcast too for anybody who wants to hear that, as well as the rest of the show. Everything is available on WGNRadio.com. Also, like us on Facebook. I am Patty V Show. I mean, that's where you can find my Facebook page. I'm trying to catch up a little bit, at least get a little closer to Nick D, who is the champion when it comes to Facebook followers. At
really?
Oh, yes.
Like how many?
Like 13, 14,000.
And how many do you have?
Not that many.
Do you know how competitive I am?
How competitive are you?
Brooke and I are very competitive. We're public relations majors. Like, we will make this happen.
You know what?
That's it.
I got a talent.
I should hire you. Now, are you at intern level or would I hire you? How are we going to make it this?
Intern level. Looking for a job right now.
I am looking for a job, but I'm more entry level, but I will intern.
I will intern.
Nick D, you better watch out.
No, not for getting. I don't want to beat Nick D. I have other things that I need to work on. It's not for the face. Yes, I will work toward the look you just gave me. Is I have to beat him, but I don't want to beat Nick D. I just want to. I want to get close. I don't aspire.
When
to.
When you get close, we'll beat him though. I play.
It's
to
all
win.
Or nothing with us.
This all got very strange.
I play to win
again. I just play. See, that's my mistake.
That's what you're doing wrong, Patty. You got to win.
I like to let it go. See, I've seen that movie too, but just once. Tell us again about your event on Saturday and Sunday at Knife and Tine.
Okay, so we are going to be doing a Beauty and the Beast brunch, mm-hmm. Complete with lovely Beauty and the Beast featured entrees from Chef Steven, some delightful cocktails, and then we also are going to have arts and crafts for the young ones, pictures with Belle, and for the adults in the group, we're going to be just raging it up at Gaston's Tavern.
So. And then are we going to the movie after?
Mm-hmm.
Are guests going?
We have we've actually made arrangements with both Webster Theater and ArcLight, which are right down the street from us.
Okay,
And have coordinated the brunch with the Movie Times, so you can go to either one.
Excellent. I love this. Okay. Exciting. Coming up after this, by the way, everyone can stay for the end of the show. We're going to catch up with Michael Heidemann at South by Southwest. But right now, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, the lovely interview that I had with the extraordinary Rick Bayless. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we are doing a pre-record. Every once in a while, I will, if they tell me I have to get up, I'm like, well, who am I interviewing? And they told me this morning's guest, and I said, yes, 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 I will definitely come in and interview Chicago's, I have to say, not just Chicago's first celebrity chef, one of the first celebrity chefs that I was telling you before we started, Mr. Rick Bayless. That the chefs that I knew were Julia Childs and you. Those were the really growing up. And my mother, who's from Mexico.
You're making me sound like I am so ancient, but I don't feel like I've got one foot in the grave right now.
Maybe I'm only 30.
Oh, okay, okay.
I was a baby.
And you were watching those old Julia
exactly
reruns,
on repeats. Right, well, because Julia Childs continues to be the celebrity. You have won a Julia Childs award. You have,
yes.
And I mean, for you, how strange is that to have gotten to the point in your career where you're getting you know, awards. You have your own line. By the way, the only salsa I will have is the, I think it's the fire roasted tomato.
Okay.
I can't. Anytime somebody, I'm like, this is not Rick Bayless's salsa.
Now branch out to the chipotle and the roasted tomatillo.
Yeah, the roasted tomatillo is very good as well. Okay. I like them all, but there's that one is my, do you have any of your own favorites when it comes to flavors? Of whether
I can't.
You can't.
I can't. It's like having a favorite child, right? I mean, I'm one of those people that takes my job as a chef very seriously, and so I have to love them all equally.
And you have to be open to the next thing, too.
You absolutely do.
Where are you from originally?
I grew up in Oklahoma City in a barbecue restaurant, if you can believe that.
In the restaurant.
And absolutely. And, you know, Julia was the one that changed my life. I loved cooking from the time I was a little kid. And when I was 10, Julia came on the television for the first time. And what she did in those crazy French chef shows that she did at WGBH in Boston was to welcome everybody into the kitchen and say that cooking could become something that you could actually take seriously, but not so seriously that it made you feel nervous in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
But she empowered me at 10 years old, if you can believe this, to make Napoleons, to make my own puff pastry, to make my own pastry cream, to put them all together. I spent 3 days doing it, and I was just in heaven the whole time doing it, because what I was learning was that, culinary skills are something that you can, you know, practice and teach yourself. And that was what started me on the road to really thinking very seriously. Like I said, I grew up in a restaurant, so I cooked all the time. But I cooked our traditional regional fare from Oklahoma. I would cook with my grandmother, who was an excellent cook, but she cooked basically Southern fare, and it was super tasty, but it didn't have the techniques that Julia was introducing me to. And I liked both things.
Right.
And I guess that's what drew me to Mexican cooking. I got to go to Mexico when I was 14 for the first time, and the only way I can really describe it was like coming home. Sure. I just didn't know that that was my home. And when I got there, it was like, oh, everything resonated with me. Everything, from the street vendors to the flavors on the plates to the generosity of the culture. I loved every part of it.
See, and we had different experiences going to Mexico, because for me, it's so overwhelming. So the fact that you had this experience where you were able to isolate those individual things, right? Because I went there when I was a teenager, and it can be a shock. Especially if you were from Oklahoma.
I'm one of these people that loves activity and color and noise. And I always did.
Mm-hmm.
So Oklahoma City wasn't really my place. there wasn't enough of that around. I was really drawn to theater when I was little. And I have to say, you cannot not think of theater when you're in Mexico, because everything is sort of bigger than life, and the way that people interact and the way the street vendors sell things, there's a theatrical quality to all of it, and I guess that's one of the things that really attracted me to Mexico.
So at 10 you're making puff pastries,
yeah,
taking 3 days, going to sleep and waking up thinking about your puff pastries.
Of course. And that's still my life. I still go to sleep.
Do you have dreams do you dream about food all the time, do you think?
Mostly when you're in the restaurant business, you have, you know, the horrible service dreams. And so it's that something falls on the floor and the guests are waiting for it at the table. And who's going to go tell them that we don't have any more? You know, it's those kind of dreams.
Well, that's very specific.
Yeah, well, it is.
The nightmare of Rick Bayless.
Right.
We're all out. 86, whatever would just happen.
86, and we can't get any more. And could we give you something else? And no, you don't like that, or you're allergic to it, and oh my God, what are we going to do? We're ruining somebody's celebration, their birthday or their anniversary.
That is remarkable, that all the years that you have been in the restaurant industry and you're still thinking about the one table that you're letting down. I mean, really, that's incredible.
We do. We take very seriously the fact that when people come to our restaurant, it's usually a commemoration of something, and we want to make it special for them. And when we can't make it special for them, it hurts. I mean, we're in the hospitality industry.
You have been a destination restaurant for a long time. I remember when Topolobampo opened up, and my mother wanted to, we have to go to Topolobampo. We have to go see Rick Bayless. And it was my first really fine dining with Mexican food. I had you know, a lot of traditional Mexican food, obviously, growing up for me. And for her, it was this sort of an artistic
interpretation of the food that she
right.
knew.
Right, right.
And is that what you've always, I mean, when yeah. you said at 14 that you went to Mexico City and you've been working in a barbecue, your family's at barbecue.
Right.
Being in the industry for so long, when did it really take hold that this was what you were going to do? Because you have built an empire. People don't always build empires when they like something.
I didn't purposely build an empire. I kind of just took the next right step, and this is what came out of it. I never got bored with my job, mm-hmm. and I always was thinking about new possibilities, which is what led me into what we have right now. When I was younger, I cooked because that's what my family did. So all through high school, all through college, I worked at my parents' restaurant. We had a catering business. I ran the catering business. Then I went to graduate school because I didn't think I was going to continue in culinary. I went to graduate school in my undergrad is in Spanish language and Latin American studies.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to graduate school, it was to study the relationship between language and culture. So I was in anthropology and linguistics. And, of course, the first thing that I did was get a job cooking because I needed to make money. And that's what I knew how to do. And I always thought of it as sort of a secondary thing to do until I was writing my dissertation for a PhD. And by that point, opened my own small catering business. I had started teaching cooking classes. I had started writing about food.
That is not your backup plan anymore.
It was not my backup plan anymore. Mm-hmm. And I had to wake up one day and say, you know, I have to recognize the fact that I'm spending a whole lot more time on my culinary stuff than I am on my dissertation. So I took the infamous year off from graduate school.
Yes.
And I just explored the relationship between not culture and language, but culture and food. And I decided that my heart was really in Mexico and the way that Mexico expresses itself in its food. And I wanted to bring some of that back to the States. So my wife and I actually moved to Mexico for 5 years, and we did nothing but research. We traveled to every state in the Republic. We ate, we cooked with local cooks, and at the end of that period, we had produced our first book, which is Authentic Mexican, which came out exactly 30 years ago this month.
Oh, happy anniversary.
And
congratulations.
It's also the 30th anniversary of Frontera because
it was Frontera. I always forget which one, because they're right by each other.
They're right by each other. So what we are celebrating right now is 30 years of Authentic Mexican and 30 years of Frontera on Clark Street. And in fact, the publication date is exactly the same date as that we opened our restaurant. You couldn't ever plan that in a million years, but that's what happened.
Well, you are celebrating, and we are celebrating Rick Bayless here on Pretty Late. Family. There's food. You know what I'm going to do? I'll share some with WGN, but I got to bring some of that home to my mom because she will
absolutely
hurt me. There's an event coming up this weekend we want to talk about when we come back. Right. The Good Food Festival is here in Chicago, and you've had a really primary response. Like you've brought so much to Chicago, and you've given so much back. So we want to talk a little bit about that when we come back on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and thrilled to have in studio with us Rick Bayless. I want to say chef, entrepreneur, humanitarian.
Oh,
so many there are so many different titles for you, but really you are a lover of culture.
I am.
You were just telling me that you had taken the year off from your dissertation. Of course, the question I have is, did you ever finish that dissertation?
I never did. And I'm waiting.
It's okay. Let yourself off the hook.
I am waiting for the University of Michigan. I've written 9 cookbooks, and they delve deeply into culture, which mm-hmm. is what I was studying at the University of Michigan. And I'm waiting for them to knock on my door and say, oh, here is an honorary doctorate. You did everything that you possibly could have done. And so if any of the University of Michigan folks are listening to this, please, I'm ready.
Let's put that email out, because I agree with you. I think
my mother would love it if I would finally finish that degree.
You and me both, my friend. You and me both. Speaking of our moms, my mom will probably not let me in the house if I don't bring home some of the food that you brought
some
with.
Of the delicious little nibbles over here.
Was this the third restaurant that you... I know that Frontera, Topolobampo, and then
Shoko on the corner.
Shoko on the corner.
Right.
And I was reading a little bit about why, because there are so many different reasons. You mentioned that... that Frontera is a destination for people. They might be celebrating something, right, which was always the reason we would be at your restaurants. It's a landmark for us. People are like, oh my God, we have reservations for Frontera. And this is something where you expanded and have made, you've gone to the point of now people can bring it home from the grocery store.
Well, that's true. I would really like to touch people with the true flavors of Mexico, because we are completely surrounded in this country with Mexican-American fare. And while it's delicious, it doesn't really reflect the culture of Mexico. That's what I've always tried to bring back to the States. And that's from the very first day I wanted. In fact, when we finished our first book, Authentic Mexican, my wife and I were having conversations about what was going to be our next project that we were going to work on, because we had finished that manuscript. And I thought maybe I would just stay in writing and try to work for one of the magazines or something. But all of a sudden it dawned on me that people will not have a flavor reference for the recipes in my book, because they know Mexican-American food. They don't know the traditional foods of Mexico. And I thought, why don't we open a restaurant where we make this food, and then people can have a touchstone for that.
Sure.
And so we opened up 30 years ago. The first table came in. They sat down. They opened the menus. They looked at what we were offering. They closed the menus. They said, this is not Mexican food. You will be out of business in 6 months. That was our first table. So it was a little hard, because I had invested my mother's retirement fund and my mother-in-law's retirement fund, and we had to make this thing work. And thankfully, when the book got into people's hands, people said, oh, this couple knows what they're doing. They've done a lot of research. Let's go and try out what they're doing. It'll be different. And then they realized that we knew what we were doing and that we knew how to cook.
Do you ever wish you could find that first table?
No.
Well, and that's the thing too, is especially when it's the first table, right?
You can have a little frightening.
It is frightening, because you can have 1,000 tables from that, but you will always remember that table. And all the acclaim, all the success, you know, and at least now you can say, ha ha.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it's unfortunate that negative voices can be so loud.
But at the same time, that really made me realize that I had an uphill battle, and mm-hmm. that I had to make sure every dish that went out of the kitchen was just perfect.
Which is why you
super well seasoned. And I, to this day, I think the same thing.
Well, it's why you're having nightmares in the middle of the night about having to disappoint a table.
Yes.
You were talking a little bit about the restaurants and the opening up all over. You're global now. I mean, people know who Rick Bayless is.
Well, maybe.
But why Chicago? What made you decide to bring your restaurant and your food to Chicago?
My wife grew up in Chicago, and we had all of our worldly possessions stored in my mother-in-law's basement in the western suburbs.
Okay.
And we had no money to move anywhere else. So we looked at each other and said, well, why don't we try living in Chicago? So we moved into a little tiny apartment up in Lakeview,
mm-hmm.
and I loved it here. We were thinking about moving. That was at the time when San Francisco was sort of at the top of the heap in terms of food cities.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought about moving out there and trying to start something out there or go to New York. But, you know, Chicago is my home. And I loved it from the very first day that we settled here. Of course, my wife had grown up in the western suburbs, so we had family around here, which made it feel a little bit more like home.
Sure.
And but neither one of us had ever been in the restaurant business here. And then we had the audacity, without ever having been in the restaurant business, to open up on Clark Street.
That's what I was just thinking. I'm like, I have friends that have opened up restaurants. I don't think I've known anyone that's opened up down here.
Well, back in those days, Clark Street was pretty sketchy.
Mm-hmm.
And we could afford the rent over there, but we couldn't two blocks closer to Michigan Avenue.
Well, now you're part of the anchor of what is obviously, you know, one of the best food destinations in the world as well.
Oh, thank you.
It's really incredible. And now you're also part of the Good Food Festival. You've
yes,
been
yes,
part
yes,
of
so.
the catalyst for that as well.
And it's a really interesting, that is a festival that is sponsored by Family Farmed. And we have our own foundation, the Frontera Farmer Foundation, that gives capital improvement grants to small Midwestern family farms. And what the Good Family Farmed organization does is try to help those farms find a market for what they're growing.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be selling to school systems or institutions or to some sort of manufacturing of food or something, but to try to get a lot of local food available to the people here in the Midwest. So we're helping the farms. They're helping the farmers to get their product into as many mouths as possible. So if you go to the food festival, the Good Food Festival this weekend, what you're going to see, the part that's open to the public, because there's many different aspects of it, but the part that's open to the public is free. And
It is. Okay.
It's at the UIC Forum this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, everyone should drop by because you will find all of these producers of amazing products, food products, mm-hmm. here in the Midwest, and they'll all be right there on the forum big room. What do you call it? It's like a gymnasium room or something like that. But I have to say that it's just jam-packed with amazing products and flavors. You'll think that you have spent your time well if you go to this food festival.
I was on my way in. I was looking at everything, and I emailed my boss. I'm like, "Do we have passes for this? Do we have media passes? I need access to everything."
Yes,
because
you should go.
I will be there. You can count on that.
Well, this is the first year it's free to the public. Mm-hmm. Before, there's been a nominal donation that you would make at the door, but because of some ticketing things, they just decided to make it open. So I think it's going to be wonderful because it will be at access a wide variety of people. And come and see what the riches of our local food scene, because it has gone in the 30 years I've been in the food business here in Chicago. It has gone from nothing to exploding. And it's a super exciting time to be alive.
Well, I like the way you put that. It's not just an exciting time, that's pretty dramatic to be alive.
That's what I think every day. It's an exciting time to be alive.
It is. I feel
a lyric from Hamilton. I have to say that it was not just my own. But for anybody that is crazy about the Hamilton cast album, as I am, it's a wonderful time to be alive. So
wow. I sense that it really struck a chord with you. So that's why it's something that's on the tip of your tongue as well. Mm. We've been talking to Rick Bayless. He'll be at the Good Food Festival this weekend. Saturday, it's open to the public, and that is at the UIC Forum. And as you mentioned, in the convention hall, I guess
that's what they call it. It looks like a gymnasium to me, but anyway,
is it the pavilion? Because that's a gymnasium.
Yeah.
So and people can find out about what's going on in the Midwest, what's available, how restaurants also procure.
Yes, because a lot of us use a lot of the products that are there, and every single year, I find new products that we work into our menus because it's always a changing group of people that are offering their beautiful wares.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, it sounds like something that is a do not miss event. Yes. At the UIC Forum. I could talk to
I'll
you
also
for...
be doing a demo there.
Are you really?
Yeah, so it's at 4:00 in the afternoon. So if anybody wants to come and say hi and watch me make some stuff with local ingredients, I'm going to do it.
Well, and I'm guessing the crowd that you draw is sizable.
It does tend to be sizable.
So find out
but
where...
I love it. I really love it. I love interacting with people. And it's not something that I always get to do because I'm on television or I'm back in the kitchens. So it's a great chance to interact with people.
Well, everyone should stop by and say hello to the remarkable Rick Bayless. And, of course, as he mentioned, has 9 cookbooks out there. You can find it. And thank you so much for making whenever I travel out of O'Hare Airport at the United Terminal.
My greatest legacy, that really? I made good food in an airport.
It is your legacy is much more far-reaching. For example, I believe when my mom hears this, she'll be very happy and feel like maybe I made it. So thank you so much for that.
You're
as
very
well.
Welcome. It's been a wonderful privilege to be with you.
Thank you again for the gifts I can bring home to my mom as well. There's some wonderful food. We welcome you back to the show anytime. Honestly, if you're wandering around late at night and you want to jump on in, the open door for Rick Bayless.
Thank you.
Of course. Thank you so much. More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio with our fantastic friends. We have in studio with us Carissa Schaefer, the proprietor extraordinaire of Knife and Tine and the Arrogant Frog in Concord 55. She's building an empire, so look out. Don't even get in her way. She ain't playing. She's got a wonderful event this Saturday and Sunday at Knife and Tine for the release of Beauty and the Beast. So there's the Princess Area?
Princess Parlor.
Princess Parlor and Gaston's Pub.
Tavern.
I've heard it both ways. Also joining us in studio are Andrew and Brooke from DePaul University. They've done a great job of sharing information about how making sure students are aware of their health and well-being, emotional, physical, and feeling as though there's a safe space for them to find help wherever they are. And we also have Jesse in studio, who made the most amazing cocktail. And I'm so sorry that Mike Heidemann, who's on the line. I'm not sorry, Mike, because you're having a blast down there, having your own fun and doing all those things. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Wait, there's cocktails and I'm not there?
I know.
Sorry, Mike.
Okay, a full disclosure. I actually told Tom not to tell you this. I said, don't tell anybody. Don't tell Mike, but this has been one of my favorite shows. And he goes, well, actually, we have to give a lot of credit to Mike. So there you go. I think this all works out very well.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad that you guys are having fun without me. I'm trying to
You booked Rick Bayless and Tom recorded that. He produced the segment. So all kudos all around. Congratulations. And thank you for such a great evening. Thank you for putting that all together for me.
Well,
for us,
of course.
For the listeners.
Can I just tell you how hungry I am after listening to that interview with Rick? Oh my gosh. Frontera is so good. I want to just bite into it right now.
Then I shouldn't tell you that he brought me food as well. I'm just saying. I mean, I did not expect that, right? Like, to be honest with you, when Carissa comes, I don't always, like, it's not a necessary, just so you know, it's not a requirement of you being in studio, just so you're aware. It's always, and I got very excited. I do a happy dance.
Do you think the chef would let me come here without food?
Probably not. Although, Mike, you know what night I wish you had been here for was, although it was a rough night, was election night. It was, but Carissa and Hannah brought some of the most amazing cocktails and comfort food. I had mac and cheese with bacon in it. I mean, if you're in a weather
also dressed up.
Yes, you were. If we're going to weather drama like that, you know, complete surprise for everybody. Mm. Well, for most people. But yeah, it was a great way. So I also want to thank you for bringing to our attention the documentary about Michael Brown in the Ferguson shooting. Was that a documentary that you had the opportunity to see?
I had not, but that has been on the tip of everyone's tongue throughout the festival. There's so many cool socially impacted films that are coming out. The one about Michael Brown is so interesting. There's also one that's called Serve Like a Girl, which is about the female military people who are fighting in the wars, and just the fact that they're over there and what they're doing for the country. And at the premiere, the women who were who the film was focused on were at the premiere, and they went on stage. So right now here in Austin, it's all about like positive feelings. And the Michael Brown one, yes, it's a hard subject to grasp, but you know, all these films are really trying to advocate for social good, which is an awesome thing.
That sounds like such a great event, because Andrew was saying before we got on the phone with you that his question is, why isn't he there? I'm not sure if you can help him with that, but I think you can tell him why he should be there next year.
Yeah, tell me.
Yeah, Andrew, jump on here, and I don't know.
Yeah, grab a last-minute flight.
There's an easy way to get in the car and just drive down here. It's an amazing festival. And you know the cool thing is, like, I have the badge and everything, and you know, I learned to talk my way into these events and everything. But there's so many cool free things that you can do down at South by Southwest that it's worth it for anybody to just take the shot to come down here to Austin, Texas, at least once in your life.
Well, I'm a Texas native, so it might be time to go back to the motherland for a little visit.
I think
so. They're calling you back.
I agree.
Austin, Texas is calling.
what did you see today?
Today, so Patty, like I mentioned yesterday, today is like where the music really, really kicked off. So today was all about eating good grub and seeing great music here in Austin. I put Torchy's for tomorrow.
Okay.
Because I know we were mentioning that. Mm-hmm. I went to this amazing place called El Camino Casino, which supposedly has one of the best burgers in Austin.
Andrew, have you heard of El Camino Casino?
Oh no! I just like the way this is like headed.
Tell me more. Tell me more about the food at the El Camino Casino, and how was it?
It was fantastic. It had like a Kuma's Corner vibe.
Okay.
It was heavy metal. The guy who took my ID at the door, he had like spikes on his leather jacket and like three teeth missing, which I thought was amazing.
You're like, that's commitment. Amazing. Wow.
Yeah. He gave me burger suggestions. Yeah, he gave me burger suggestions, and I didn't really take them because I don't know if I trusted him. But
he lost his teeth.
Yeah. But
you're like, was that fantastic? You're like, is that a burger related incident? Yeah. I just need to know.
Yeah, it was really cool. I felt a little out of place there for the time being because when you place your order, they scream your name really loud and they make jokes over the loudspeaker and everything, and you're around all these tough cookies. So it was a really cool place. The burger, surprisingly good. I was kind of worried there for a second. So I tried that place and I was very happily surprised.
And you were there for a full week. So you're not, I mean, you're, you know, submerging yourself. Am I saying the right word? Being submerged?
Yeah.
Yes. Into this entire experience. Is there ever like a little bit of fatigue where you're just like, okay, I'm seeing a lot. I need to remove myself from the sensory overload.
Oh, Patty, let me tell you, my feet are killing me. I've been doing so much walking, and yeah, of course, there's a lot of times I want to just pull up a blanket in an alley and just put the nap.
Do you not do that? I don't care how tempting that is, and doesn't sound very tempting, but please don't do that. Power through.
It'd be me and the guy from El Camino Casino.
Exactly. Now you know how he lost his teeth, was falling asleep in an alley during South by Southwest. He just wanted to snuggle.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the fatigue sets in. But that's why, you know, they have an app here, so you're able to organize your day pretty well. But I'm a one man wrecking machine right now, so I have my day planned from about 10 in the morning until about right now when I'm talking to you. I'm actually surprised. I'm fueled by these Java drinks that they give you in the press room, and lots and lots and lots of coffee.
And what do the kids do in the press room? I mean, like, are they blogging? Are they, do you see them in the corner, like, recording something and sending it back to their stations?
Yeah. It's so bizarre because you're here and it's a global audience and it's a global scale of all these people that come from, you know, all over the world. So I was talking to a reporter from China who was telling me that he was there for the tech portion of the festival, and he was talking about how Korean pop is kind of taking over a lot of the Eastern world. And we were talking about music with that. And then I look over to the other corner, and there's somebody from Spain who's writing an article for their, like, local Herald. And then I'm hearing other people talking about in Seattle. They're from an NPR station. They're talking. And we have Greg Kot, who I heard is in town from the Chicago Tribune. And he's doing write-ups as well. So it's kind of cool, like, to have that whole thing. But there is a massage table, and I've yet to use
what?
It.
What? In the press room? In the media room?
Yes, because everyone is so exhausted from, you know, all the typing we have to do.
Sounds like a hard life
why,
to me.
Why haven't you hit that up yet?
They're doing tech stuff, and you're thinking about hanging out in an alley.
Yeah, go drool on that table is all I'm saying.
Right? I'm trying to get into it, but there's a long line. I guess that's my only.
Well, yeah, are they being massaged in public, or is there like a screen?
Yeah.
Okay, it's not like they're getting, like, disrobing and then jumping out.
No, but still. Are you disrobing, though?
Exactly. No, but it is still weird to, like, be sort of massaged in public. Am I wrong about... No,
that's well, weird. Yeah, to be that's laying weird. In, like, a room weird. With other press and yeah. people are blogging and you're getting rubbed down.
Although you and I have been at King Spa, so we're up
that's
for anything.
That's true, yeah.
That's happened.
I was, like, live tweeted it. Everyone is looking at me now. Cucumbers are out.
See, now we have a goal. Michael, you need to live tweet your massage in the media room.
Yeah.
This sounds a lot like Brian Alzheimer's segment.
It does.
They have now sprayed me with juices.
See, now that's the thing. There are so many people from this station that are someplace warmer. You somehow avoided the snowstorm this week.
I can't believe that. How is it?
It's
not great.
Fine.
This
fine.
Is gone. It like melted today.
It's fine. Yeah.
I didn't know it was supposed to snow.
We've like, gone through the next four like, seasons in about 24 hours here.
It's not fine. You're lying, Andrew, but thank you for playing along.
Just woke up on yeah. Sunday.
Was Jeff like, Carlin oh, yeah. has been messing with me from Mexico.
Yeah. The rest of the Rokan show is down in Mexico.
Not amused.
Did you see the picture of the shot that Brian Altimer took between his knees?
No.
He took a picture of his because yeah that what? Yes Tom that happened
gross
yeah no but he's yeah. it's of the ocean of course
oh that's cute
kind of it's his knees though it's yeah, yeah. exactly yeah I need a picture you know I think that you should look at that picture that Brian Altimer took and took one to mock it that's what I need
I'm going to create a meme of it, actually.
While yeah. getting massaged.
I think so, where you put your knees up and take a shot of, like, Mick Fleetwood. Could you find Mick Fleetwood again and say, hey, I need to do this really weird thing?
The Golden Lilac Man? The man okay, with the okay, golden
or Bill Nye, the science guy, yeah. right? Bill Go Nye, track him down and say, guy, this is going to be really weird, and just stick with me. On or,
science rules.
Or you take a picture of your knees, and it looks like they're photobombing. They don't have to know that you're doing it.
A nurse yeah, is the property.
I'm pretty sure they both have temporary restraining orders on me already. So,
Mike, you have homework, so you better get busy.
Are there any goals? Do you have any celebrity sightings that you're aiming for?
Yeah.
Yes, so I'll continue. So today was a phenomenal day because there was a lot of convocation. So Mick gave his speech today. He gave his keynote speech today. And then after that, I went to go and see the Abbott Brothers, which, by the way, Patty, if there's, you know, South by Southwest is all about discovering new music. I put these guys on the shelf for too long. The Abbott Brothers are my new favorite band. They are fantastic.
What do you mean you put them on the shelf? I don't know what that means.
I had heard about them for about like 6 months, and people kept saying, the Abbott Brothers, you should listen to them. Oh, and I'm sorry, the Abbott Brothers.
I've heard it both ways.
And, and they kept saying, you got to listen to this band. Didn't listen to them, heard them tonight for the first time live in concert, blew me away. And so I photographed their show tonight, and then the weirdest thing that ever happened, you know, last night was Wu-Tang, and I saw Seth Rogen in the crowd. Tonight, I'm leaving the Avett Brother concert, and we're done in the photo booth, not in the photo booth, the photo pit, and I bump shoulders with this dad looking guy, and here it is, Judd Apatow. So I give him a big old high five.
Whoa! I love it. Michael, it sounds like you're having an amazing trip. We look forward to talking to you again tomorrow night. Again, now you have goals. Massage table, live
massage
tweeting,
table.
And pictures from between your knees.
Yep.
In order for that to make sense, you have to look at Jeff Altimer's picture of the ocean, just so that we're clear.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Tom Hush, I need to teach you that rim shot, because that would have been a perfect time for that.
Oh.
The what?
This is like straight out of context.
I don't have time to
sure.
get it, because Nick D's show is up yep. next. Otherwise, I would try to find it for you, but I can't. No, I don't know how to pull. I don't know how to pull the index up. Next time, you know what? It'll be a delayed rim shot tomorrow night. Lise won't know why it's happening, but we'll do it anyway. Mike,
it was great talking to you. I miss you a bunch.
Miss you too. And also, everyone can follow Mike Heidemann on Facebook. Mike Heidemann, traditional spelling.
Two
ends. Heidemann, how it sounds with two ends. Thanks, Mike. Have a great time.
All right, Patty. Have a good night.
You too. Thank you so much. And I want to thank Andrew and Brooke, our guests in the studio, all the guests that we had on the show tonight. Thank
this
you.
Is awesome.
Thank you very much. Look forward to having you back very soon.
Oh, we
well.
Will be back.
I know.
Anytime you want.
They're like, we're here. Oh, they're knocking on the door. Can we come in?
We Nick love D, radio.
Thank you so much to Knife and Tyne, Carissa, and Jesse for bringing you wonderful treats. We'll see you all at Knife and Tyne on Saturday and Sunday for the Beauty and the Beast event they're hosting with Gaston's Tavern. And the Princess Parlor, all at 1417 West Fullerton Avenue in Lincoln Park. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.